November 24th, 2009. A husband and wife are splitting up. Maybe they've grown apart, or maybe one of them put them $1 million in debt just before the FBI began an investigation into their family business for fraud. Whatever the reason, two go to bed that night, and the next morning, only one is still alive. This is a story of greed, betrayal, fraud, murder, and lies. This is Dwight and Sherry Tobin. Accident, suicide, or murder? Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for our friends all the way over there in Estonia.
Estonia. I don't even know where that is.
It's just outside of Russia.
Is that where the princess was? The Princess Diaries was from?
I'm just going to say yeah, because I have no idea.
It's not. It's Genovia. Oh, okay. Is where the Princess Diaries princess is from.
Yeah, I don't think there is a Genovia.
This is Estonia, not Genovia.
Yes, this is Estonia.
But that's what it made me think of. Yeah. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Okay. For our friends in Estonia. Tere tu la must.
Very nice.
There you go.
And if you're from Genovia, welcome.
So say hello to the princess for us.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to like, rate, and review. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening right this very second. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button below.
Please do.
You can find us on Instagram at Hitch to Homicide or on X at H2H_podcast. And if you want true crime with us all the time, please join our closed Facebook group, The In-Laws and Outlaws. Just go to Facebook and type in H2H In-Laws and Outlaws, answer a few questions, and you're in.
You're in.
Go join, lovely group of people,
yes.
And I post photos and other information in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting case suggestions and true crime listener stories, and mm-hmm. we're actually going to cover one today, a true crime listener story. We're going to talk about their brush with crime.
Nice.
Keep those coming.
Yeah, and also, if you've got any stupid crimes, let me know too, because every once in a while, I'll get a couple of them off there, and they're really good, so yeah.
Out of The In-Laws and Outlaws.
Yeah. It's really good.
We appreciate everybody who listens each week and takes the time to drop us a note, including Miss Tiffany Payne, who wanted us to give a shout out to her sweet husband, Kyle Russell Payne Jr., who passed away on July 6th, 2023.
Oh.
Apparently, according to Tiffany, he didn't quite get her obsession with true crime, as some husbands do not. Rob Pothorse?
No, listen, I'm doing the podcast.
I know.
Just because when I see a bag on the side of the highway, I think there's body parts in it now.
Well, so. That's what we do for our husbands.
I know.
But Tiffany, speaking as someone who was a young widow myself, I'm quite sure he's watching over you each and every day. Kyle did serve in the Army, so thank you, and Kyle.
Thank you for
your service. We know it's the family who makes the sacrifices.
Yep.
And we're so glad, Tiffany, that you are a part of our H2H family. Lots of supportive, loving people in our group.
Sending lots of love out to you, Tiffany.
I am giving you a real till death do us part case today.
Uh-oh. Should I be worried?
Prepare for the nightmares.
All right.
I'm just kidding. Before I get started, let me thank some sources. The Arizona Republic, badmarriages.net. What a site. First time I've ever been there. Highly recommend it.
Wow.
Murderpedia, Find a Grave, and Discovery Channel's Grave Secrets.
Okay. Well, you ready?
I am.
Let's do it.
Dwight Noel Tobin was born on May 8, 1953, in Clay Center, Kansas. His parents are Lowell and Lois Yeager Tobine. Dwight will have two brothers and a sister.
Okay.
3 years after Dwight is born, and also in Clay Center, Kansas, on July 24, 1956, Sherry Lee Girton is born to parents Russell and Arlene. She will have three sisters.
Okay.
Now, Dwight and Sherry both grew up in Clay Center, Kansas. Dwight's family owned a farm, and Sherry's family owned a successful propane gas business.
Huh.
These two are sweethearts from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
I read in one source that he would drive his tractor through town and she would come running and jump on the tractor with him.
There's nothing more romantic than driving a tractor through town.
Does it get any more romantic than that?
For the love of your life. That's how I got my wife.
No, it's not. No, it is not.
Okay.
Don't tell people these stories. They're going to think you were driving through town on a tractor, on the John Deere.
But it's so romantic.
It didn't happen. Okay. It didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen.
But these two are high school sweethearts, and they graduated from Clifton High School. And Dwight graduated first, obviously, because he's 3 years older, and he headed off to the University of Oklahoma, leaving Sherry behind. She's got to finish high school.
The Sooners.
But in 1975, when she is 19 and he is 22, these two get married.
Mm.
Now, in 1978, Dwight and Sherry moved to Salinas, Kansas, because Dwight wanted to study animal sciences at Kansas State, and Sherry took a job at a hospital in the call center in order to support her husband.
I wonder what animal sciences is.
Animal sciences?
Yeah. I mean,
well, like livestock, you know, how all the ways to like better care for livestock, things to do for them.
Gotcha. Anything dealing with farming and livestock.
Exactly.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. It's like an ag major, animal sciences. He's a smart guy. I'm just going to tell you now, Dwight is book smart.
Okay.
Book smart.
Okay.
But Sherry took a job at the hospital because she's got to support him while he's in school. But she's also going to have a baby just a couple years after they are married.
Mm.
They name the little girl Jennifer.
Okay.
Now, while at Kansas State, Dwight earns both his bachelor's and his master's degrees, and I believe that it's during this time that Sherry and Dwight have two more children, a son they name Brett and a daughter, Allison.
All right.
Now, apparently during this time while he's in school, he's playing the stock market pretty hard, and he loses most of their money and their assets while he's doing this.
Wow.
But Dwight isn't to be discouraged. He decided he just needed to improve on his investment skills. So he got a job as a commodities broker in Salinas, Texas, to better learn about the stock market.
All right.
Then Dwight, Sherry, and the whole lot of them moved to Denver because Dwight was going to get his MBA at the University of Denver.
Wow.
And in 1991, he now had his undergrad, his master's, and his MBA.
Nice.
And by this time, Dwight is 38 years old.
Okay.
Dwight starts a loan brokerage company. And if you don't know what that is, a loan broker or a mortgage broker is the middleman in between a lender and a borrower.
So he's a bookie. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I mean, a borrower can borrow directly from a lender,
mm-hmm.
and a loan broker can help the borrower decide which lender meets the borrower's financial goals.
Gotcha.
Using a loan broker can help the borrower save time and can usually help the borrower find a lender with lower interest rates.
Gotcha.
Can you tell I really looked that up? I wanted to get all that in.
You done good, honey.
So especially when the borrower is a business owner, using a loan broker is a lot more efficient and very beneficial.
Okay.
However, for some small businesses or individuals, borrowing directly from the bank can be more reasonable.
Right.
And that is because the loan broker charges a fee.
Well, of course.
He's the middleman.
There you go.
And this fee can be as high as 17%.
Wow.
17% of the loan.
I'm in the wrong business.
There's money to be made
yeah.
by being a loan broker.
Right. Does he have to break any knees if they don't pay?
Now, while Dwight gets his business off the ground and starts making lots of money, Sherry gets her real estate license. Now, I don't know what transpired, but Sherry somehow gets her real estate license revoked in 2004.
Really?
So what unethical, illegal things she did in order for that to transpire, I have no idea. But it seems as if you shake hands with Sherry and you better count your fingers when you're done.
Okay.
It's then that Dwight suggests, let's move to Arizona. The real estate business is booming there, and he's a loan broker, and he's making tons of money.
And buddy, business is a booming. I love that movie.
Dwight and Sherry packed up and moved to Gilbert, Arizona, which is about 17 miles from Scottsdale. They bought a beautiful luxury home in a gated community situated on an exclusive golf and country club.
Nice.
Dwight bought Sherry her dream car, a Jaguar.
There you go.
A Jaguar.
Jaguar.
And it seemed that the more Sherry got, the more Sherry wanted.
Oh, here she comes. She's a man eater. Sorry.
According to one source, she thought Dwight wasn't paying enough attention to the business and was letting it slip. Hmm. She was afraid this was going to affect her luxury lifestyle. So Dwight says, okay, Sherry, honey, you manage the business. Hmm. Big mistake.
Big.
Huge. Now, why would you let your wife, who's lost her real estate license for unethical behavior, run your multi-million-dollar loan brokerage firm?
Because I'm in love.
I think he is just in love.
Yeah.
And Dwight is none the wiser of what is going on until he starts to receive phone calls from his clients asking, how are you feeling, Dwight? How are you doing, Dwight? Hmm. And Dwight's confused. But he learns that Sherry has been telling clients that Dwight was in the hospital.
What?
And that was why their payments were delayed. That's why they weren't paying anybody. Whoa. Dwight's in the hospital.
Okay.
When Dwight is out of the dark and the imaginary hospital, he discovers that $50,000 is missing from the company. But Sherry told him that she had used the money for family expenses. And Dwight forgives her misstep.
Oh,
that's okay, honey.
Yeah.
As long as you spend it on the family.
Yeah.
But Sherry is stealing more and more from the company, and eventually all these chickens are going to come home to roost. She was going to have to come clean. And instead of facing the music, she sent text messages to her family like goodbye texts, and then she disappeared.
Hmm.
Dwight found Sherry at her friend's house, unconscious from a drug overdose. It was a suicide attempt.
Really?
Medics revive Sherry, and it's then that Dwight is asking, why would she do such a thing?
Yeah.
That Sherry actually comes clean. And she tells him that they owed their creditors over $1 million.
Whoa.
So now they have to make some hard choices. But Dwight stuck with Sherry. They sold their beautiful home on the golf course in Gilbert and moved from the, 6,000-square-foot home to a condo. And they rented this condo in the 800 block of East Mountain View Road in Scottsdale.
Okay.
Then in 2008, right on the heels of this, the FBI swoops in and begins to investigate Dwight Tobin for fraud.
What?
For embezzling almost $1 million, $750,000. Now, I looked high and low for the scoop on this, but I couldn't find anything online. And short of using the Freedom of Information Act, I couldn't get anything.
Okay.
But it's not good.
Yeah.
You don't want the feds raiding you.
Yeah, when you owe $750,000.
Sherry spent all of their money. She put them in debt, and now the feds are hot on Dwight's trail.
Wow.
And you know, none of this bodes well with their old country club friends either. So they've had to sell their house, they've had to move to a condo, and now the feds are after him.
Wow.
Finally, in early November 2009, Dwight's attorney is like, dude, enough is enough.
Yeah.
He tells Dwight to divorce Sherry.
Oh, wow.
and to block her from using any of their remaining financial assets.
Good attorney advice.
For anything.
Yeah.
And this little tidbit of information leads me to believe that Sherry was the one who was actually embezzling the $750,000 from the business.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
But I think she set it up to look like Dwight is the criminal. Mm-hmm. That is just my opinion. Knowing the whole story, you can make up your own mind about all of that when I'm finished.
All right.
But Dwight's attorney tells him, cut Sherry loose. Now, we can only assume that Dwight and Sherry have this conversation, and it goes over like a porcupine in a balloon toss.
That's a new one.
What's that country song, Get Your Tongue Out of My Mouth Because I'm Kissing You Goodbye?
I haven't heard that one yet.
Ray Stevens sang it, but John Denver also sang it.
Did he really?
Which is why I thought you would know it.
I've never heard. I mean, listen, I know every John Denver song that he ever did. And I've
No, you heard, don't, because well, he sang Get Your Tongue Out of My Mouth Because I'm Kissing You Goodbye.
That's a good one.
There you go, folks.
All right.
I only say that I'm pretty sure this conversation didn't go well when he says, hey, I'm divorcing you. Because on November 9th, 2009, Sherry Tobin goes out and buys herself a 9mm handgun.
Oops.
It's kind of like my mom always said, nothing good happens after midnight. Nothing good happens after your wife goes out and buys a 9mm handgun.
That's it. Yep.
Especially after you've told her, babe, it's over.
Yeah. Wow.
So Dwight is leaving Sherry. He's divorcing her. And his plan is to move to Enid, Oklahoma, to live with his brother, Bryce. Dwight is planning to be there by Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Now, in an interview with Dwight and Sherry's oldest daughter, she says that her father's attorney suggested that her dad leave the country, that he go to Mexico and lay low. But I looked this up. And advising your American client to flee from a federal case is malpractice.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
And if and when you're caught by the feds, you then face another separate criminal offense. And federal prisons are way nicer than gin pop in a penitentiary.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah.
Regardless of how this went down, Dwight tells his kids, look it, if I just up and disappear one day, don't worry about me.
Hmm.
So he tells his kids, who, by the way, love their father so, so much. He was like their coach for Little League. He was very involved with his three children. He tells them, I've got my affairs in order. I'm leaving, but I will be in touch. I will text you or I will call you.
So he tells them this personally.
He tells them this personally.
Okay.
And that is the last time any of Dwight's children will ever see him again.
Wow.
Now, he's rented a U-Haul to hitch to the back of his Ford truck because he's taking this trip 15 hours to get to his brother's house.
Okay, well, if it's 15 hours, and what age range is he in?
He's 57.
Okay, you can add a lot more time on that because of bathroom breaks. Just saying.
And you know what? Now that you've said that, I'm going to say this. That's called foreshadowing.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have that in. But it's true. That is foreshadowing.
Well, I'm going to give it one of these.
Okay.
There you go.
But you're going to have two of those because there is another foreshadowing.
Okay.
That was an unexpected foreshadowing.
All right. Well, I'll be ready for the next one.
Okay.
All right.
But this means that theoretically, in order for him to be in Oklahoma by Thanksgiving, which is the 26th of November, mm-hmm. he needs to leave by the 24th.
Okay.
And according to court records, that is the day he's planning on leaving.
All right.
Meanwhile, Sherry is depressed. She's destitute. According to her, she wants to kill herself. So she formed a suicide plan.
Okay.
She bought this gun after Dwight told her it was over. And on November 22nd, she went to a gun range, to a gun club.
Yeah.
She's practicing.
Okay. I don't think you have to practice for suicide.
Well, I was waiting for somebody to chime in with that one. Yeah, everybody's driving or mowing the yard and going, wait a minute. But Sherry's plan is that she would end her own life somewhere between November 24th and November 28th, 2009. And remember, Thursday the 26th is Thanksgiving.
Right.
But according to Sherry, her plan to die by suicide during that time goes awry. No one seems to be able to nail down the exact date. Again, I said the court records show that the 24th is the day. I think that's the case as well. But according to Sherry, she takes her gun and she walks into the bedroom she shares with Dwight. Y'all think she's still sharing a bedroom with her
husband? That seems a little weird.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's asleep. She's going to shoot herself in the bedroom while he's in bed asleep.
Okay.
But Dwight wakes up and there's a struggle for the gun and it goes off. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's like that line from the show Chicago. I fired 3 warning shots into his head. Right?
Yeah.
She shoots him in the head. Wow. He drops immediately. But if she was suicidal, and I'm not saying she wasn't, it seems maybe possibly logical that after she realizes what she's done, that she would carry out her own plan to die herself.
Unless he had a big insurance policy.
He didn't.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
Oh, wow. So no. She just wanted him dead.
And that's where this story would end if it was like a murder-suicide. But right. That's not the case.
Right.
And that's not where this story ends.
Okay.
Sherry wraps up her dead husband in the comforter. She drags his body to the garage. Now, mind you, Sherry's like 5'3 or 5'4. Mm-hmm. She's not a skinny girl, but she's short. She's little.
Right.
And Dwight is 6 feet tall and weighs about 275 pounds.
Good Lord.
That's a big guy.
That's a big guy.
She drags him to the garage. She wraps him in a tarp. She texts Dwight's brother, Bryce, on Dwight's phone and says, I have the flu. I won't be there in Oklahoma for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And on Thanksgiving, Sherry sends texts from Dwight's phone saying, Happy Thanksgiving!
Wow.
She will also send these same well wishes from her own phone to these same family members, including her own 3 grown children.
Is he still in the garage?
He is still in the garage.
Ooh. Okay.
Now, when these grown children try to call their father and don't get an answer, Sherry tells her kids, your father's moved to Mexico to live with a friend. That's it. Dad's gone to Mexico. Okay?
End of story. Enjoy the turkey leg.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy the leftovers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Sherry has a body to dispose of and some cleaning up to do.
And some deodorant to get out there. My gosh, how many days has he been out there now?
And this is Arizona in November, so it's cooler.
Yeah, but
it's cooler.
It's still hot out there.
It's not 117 like it can be.
True.
But she's got cleaning to do. She goes out. She buys a reciprocating saw.
A sawzall.
And that's because it's plenty difficult to carry around and get rid of 275 pounds.
Yeah.
But if you disarticulate a body, makes it a little lighter.
Wow.
She removes the hands, the feet, and the head, then the arms. She puts his parts in black trash bags in Dwight's truck and drives away, dropping off parts here and there in the desert.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
When she comes back to Scottsdale, she cleans out the garage with bleach, pulls up the carpet in the condo bedroom and has it replaced. She cleans out Dwight's truck and abandons the white Ford pickup at an apartment complex. Before she walks away, she turns on the radio in this white Ford pickup. She turns it to a rap station and tosses the keys into the driver's side floorboard, leaving the driver's side window rolled down about an inch. The truck will be vandalized with black spray paint. Whether Sherry does this herself, I personally think she does.
Right.
Or someone else does it is unclear. My money's on Sherry. On one side is the word punk. And on the tailgate, it says, Hustlin' is the Majar, M-A-J-A-R.
Okay.
Now, Hustlin' is the Major is a song by Jay Hustle. By the way, the S is a money sign.
Okay.
He's a hip-hop artist from Auckland, New Zealand. He blends old-school beats with modern flow. This song, Hustling Major, features a rapper named Shamrock, who was on season 4 of MTV's Wild and Out.
Okay.
So I think hustling is the majar is Sherry's way of making it look like the truck was stolen. She leaves the radio station on a rap station, the keys in the floorboard, and the window cracked, pretty clear.
Yeah.
She wants someone to steal the truck, but who's going to steal it with all the spray paint on it?
Right.
I mean, you're asking for attention, and if you're driving a stolen car, the last thing you want is attention,
exactly.
Sherry.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Sherry is breaking the lease on the condo and selling off her furniture. That's called foreshadowing.
Okay, here we go. Let me do both hands this time.
Yeah, that was the planned foreshadowing.
Yeah.
In early December, Dwight's kids are getting updates from him via text saying, "Don't worry about me. I'm good. I'm good." Then on December 20th, 2009, less than a month after Sherry shoots and dismembers her husband, an arm is found 100 miles away from where Sherry and Dwight spent their last night together at the condo.
Wow.
It's found just off US 60 south of Florence Junction in Pinal County. Someone who stopped to relieve themselves on the side of the road.
Surprise.
They think they see something odd. And on closer inspection, it's a body part.
Wow.
It's an arm.
Man.
This person notifies the sheriff's office, and the remains, the arm, is sent to the Pinal Medical Examiner's office.
Okay.
2 days later, on December 22nd, Sherry shows up at her oldest daughter's house, begging to be taken in. She's crying to her daughter, Jennifer, because Dwight has left her, and she's destitute and has nowhere to go. And Jennifer takes her in.
Hmm.
Then a day later, on December 23rd, 2009, another hiker or somebody stopping to relieve themselves on the side of the road on Interstate 10 in La Paz County sees something odd and realizes it's part of a body.
Wow.
It's a full torso.
Oh.
And it's not like somebody tried to hide it. It's just tossed by the side of the road.
So it wasn't even in a bag or anything. It was just an exposed body part.
Well, I've seen these pictures, and I don't know if they're covering them up, like for the police files, but they're like burlap bags.
Okay.
But this person who finds the torso calls police, and these remains are taken to the medical examiner's office in Tucson.
Okay.
Christmas comes and goes with Dwight, but remember he told his children that if he up and disappeared, not to worry.
Don't worry about me.
Don't worry about me. And honestly, I do not know what happened to Dwight's brother in Oklahoma or why he didn't think it was hinky that his brother got over the flu eventually after Thanksgiving and didn't
right.
come on to Enid
yeah.
to live with him.
Right.
But what you're going to discover is that this family doesn't really seem to communicate a lot.
Hmm.
It's not like my family where I'm texting everybody nonstop,
yep.
the kids, I'm sending text messages, I'm leaving voicemails.
Every day, all day.
Yeah. I mean, we're a family. That's what I do. I'm a mom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Moms do that. But the day after Christmas, December 26th, 2009, a motorist stops to relieve themselves again on the side of the Beeline Highway near the Sugarloaf exit.
Okay, so remind me never to move to Arizona because it seems like everybody has urinary problems.
No, it's just that there, you know, places to stop are few and far between.
I know. Arizona,
out in the desert.
Right, Arizona, I know you don't have urinary problems, so don't send me emails. It was a joke.
Send them to Rob. Don't send them to me.
Okay.
Because I have never relieved myself on the side of a highway.
Well,
ever.
Thank you.
But this person's out there on the Beeline Highway near the Sugarloaf exit, and tossed nearby where he is standing is an arm.
Hmm.
They call police, and the human remains are turned over to the Maricopa County Medical Examiner's Office.
Wow.
So three body parts in three different areas of the desert are found during the holidays, and now they're at three different medical examiner's office.
Oh, so the medical examiner's offices, they don't know that the other medical, they don't know they have these body parts.
Not yet.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, another couple months, they're going to have a full body.
No, there's never going to be a full body. I'm telling you now.
Okay.
Dwight's children go on with their lives. They email and text with their dad every now and again. It's just enough for them not to worry. I mean, they get messages back and texts here and there, and it's just enough for them not to worry.
Yeah, why would you worry if you're getting texts?
And Sherry is still living with her oldest daughter, which makes it pretty darn easy to manage expectations, right? Mm-hmm. She sees that her daughter's worried about not hearing from their dad, and Sherry, who still has Dwight's phone and is using his email account as Dwight, can toss a little tidbit out here and there, a little crumb to keep the kids satisfied that their dad is safe.
And of course, they didn't have Find Friends then.
No. And if you had Find Friends and the feds were crawling up your butt, I don't think you'd have it turned on. I don't think you'd have your location turned on.
Exactly.
But then two things happen. Jennifer and her mother, Sherry, aren't getting along so great. Jennifer thinks her mom's given up. Her mom is depressed. She's lost her husband and their business and their life of luxury.
Their Jaguar.
So Sherry's daughter is torn between feeling bad for her mom and wanting to drop kick her mom out the front door. Yeah. Like, she wants her mother to take some initiative to take care of herself.
Sure.
She's a young mother and she's actually pregnant at this time. Mm. Then 5 months since the last contact with her dad, Jennifer has a baby, her new baby boy. She's texted her dad, emailed him. He doesn't show up. And she calls her father. There's no answer. And this isn't like her dad. He loves his kids. This is a huge life event. Right. He never missed any of these. Loves his kids, loves his grandchildren. But when she calls his phone, his voicemail isn't full. So it's not like he's not checking his phone messages.
Okay.
But he is not returning any calls or emails anymore.
Gotcha.
Then after a huge fight with her mom, Sherry moves out of Jennifer's house, her daughter's house. And after this, her daughter has no more contact with her mother. Hmm. She doesn't have a forwarding address for her mom. She doesn't even know where her mom is going. So you have to think that's a pretty bad blow up for the two of them.
Yeah, big time.
Then in July of 2010, Dwight's children contact the police. I've read it was the oldest daughter, Jennifer, who called, and I've seen in another source in an old newspaper article that it was the youngest daughter, Allison. It doesn't really matter who called the Scottsdale police.
Right.
But a month later, in August of 2010, this case falls into the hands of Detective Jennifer Paxton.
Okay.
Now, you know I love a good female detective.
Yep. Yep. Relentless.
Detective Paxton sees that this 57-year-old man named Dwight Tobine hasn't been seen since late November 2009. So she checks with other police departments in the area, and she finds that Dwight's not in custody anywhere. But he is listed as a victim of criminal damage. There's a white Ford pickup truck at an apartment complex in the 800 block of East Mountain View Road in Scottsdale, just 7 miles away from the beautiful home that Dwight used to live in on the golf course, that is sitting in this apartment complex. So Detective Paxton goes to the apartment complex, and she's thinking, this guy's too embarrassed to let his kids know that this is where he lives.
Right.
So Detective Paxton and Detective Hugh Lockerbie drive to this apartment complex thinking that they're going to just have a chat with him. Mm-hmm. And when they get to the apartment complex, they see this white Ford truck with plates registered to Dwight Tobine. And they can see the criminal damage, the spray painting on the truck. But what they notice is that the truck has been there for a good long while.
Right.
It's covered in dust and pine needles and pine cones. They inspect the truck a little bit closer and see that the keys are in the floorboard, the window's down about an inch or so, and they're thinking, what is going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
So they check with the apartment complex manager and ask about their resident, Dwight Tobine. And the manager's confused and tells the detectives,
there ain't no Dwight here.
There's no Dwight Tobine that lives here.
Yeah.
The manager tells police that, yes, the truck has been parked there for a while, and when they run the tags, it's not associated with any of the leases. Because remember, Like back in the day when I lived in an apartment, remember you'd have to give them your license plate number.
Yeah.
Well, they tow this truck and they have it processed. There are no shell casings or blood stains. But when they look inside the cab, the seat is pulled way forward, almost like under the steering wheel. You know what they're talking about, Rob?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of every time I get into your SUV and I smack my head on the ceiling.
I'm short. I like to see over my car. So I jack it way up and I'm way close. And then Rob has to fold himself up. He just, all you know what he has to do? He just has to hit that button that says number two on the door, and then it'll take him to where he's supposed to be sitting.
I can't remember.
Number
such
one
things.
Is me. I'm number one.
I know.
But that's what I thought about when I read this, that they're like, wow.
Yeah.
Somebody really short was driving this truck.
Yeah.
And police know from the missing person report that Dwight's over 6 feet and weighs about 275 pounds.
Right.
So it's pretty clear that Dwight wasn't the last person to drive the car.
Sure.
And when they turn over the ignition, rap music is playing on the radio, which is music that Dwight did not listen to.
Of course he didn't. He was probably listening to Get Your Tongue Out of My Mouth While I Kiss You Goodbye.
Get your tongue out of my mouth because I'm kissing you goodbye.
Yeah.
But the police are thinking, okay, it kind of looks like the truck was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So Detective Paxton digs a little deeper into the life of Dwight Tobin and discovers that he had financial woes and that he was actually being investigated by the FBI for fraud. Dwight had embezzled $750,000 of money, and his family doesn't know where he is. This is what she finds out.
Right.
Now, the police have spoken to both of the daughters, and this time they reach out to Dwight and Sherry's son, Brett. And when Detective Paxton calls him, Brett isn't worried. He doesn't think his father's missing because he just received an email from him saying, "Don't worry about me." Brett thinks his father is starting over somewhere else in the world.
Okay.
But Detective Paxton tells him, well, we found his white pickup truck in an apartment complex where he does not live.
Right.
And this does worry Brett. And he tells police, I'm in. I'll help in any way I can.
Okay.
So Detective Paxton, with the help of Sherry's kids, tracks her down in Phoenix, and police set up a meeting with Sherry. They want to have a chat with her. Sherry shows up at the police station. They put her in an interrogation room, and Detective Paxton and Detective Lockerbie talk to her. And Sherry is crying. She's just crying and saying, quote,
crocodile tears.
Exactly. She's crying and saying, quote, I'd like to know where my husband is, end quote. And Paxton and Lockerbie are like, yeah. That's why you're here, Miss Sherry.
Yeah.
She tells him the last time she saw her husband, Dwight, was the Friday after Thanksgiving on November 27th, 2009. She tells them he was packing up to leave that day. Quote, we were splitting up for a while because I think you probably know there's a bunch of financial stuff going on, end quote. That's putting it mildly, Sherry.
Yeah.
Sherry tells the detectives that he said, quote, I'm going to sound selfish, but I'm going to take off and you're going to have to figure out how to take care of yourself, end quote.
That one I can believe.
I think half of that sentence is true.
Yeah.
I don't think he said, I'm going to sound selfish. I think he probably said, I'm taking off and you're going to have to figure out how to do this on your own.
Yep.
Now, Sherry tells the detectives that she thought it's all temporary. This is all going to be temporary, him being away. And that she has tried to call him and email him, but, quote, I get nothing back, end quote. She asks police if they know what's going on with Dwight. And they tell her, no, we don't know. Yeah, that's why we're chatting with you, Sherry.
Why would we know?
What they learn from Sherry and the kids is that the only communication is through text and emails. So Detectives Paxton and Lockerbie get a court order to get into Dwight's personal email account. And what they find is that some of Dwight's emails have been opened. Someone was reading them, and in some cases, responding. So now police are like, is he just in hiding? Yeah. Does he have a girlfriend? Because based on his emails, he doesn't seem to be missing. But as they read through all of these emails that are sent and received in Dwight's account, they come across something very interesting.
Okay.
The emails from the kids are all saying stuff like, where are you? Why won't you return my calls? But the emails from Sherry are very loving and sweet. Quote, we miss you. Reach out to someone. We want you to come back. I love you so very much. End quote.
Jeez.
And Detective Paxton is thinking, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Mm-hmm. This is a man who left her with nothing. And he up and walked away from her. Detective Paxton's thinking, where's the email where she absolutely loses her shit on Dwight?
Mm-hmm.
Where she calls him every name in the book for leaving her all alone with no money and nowhere to live. Yeah. Why isn't she angry? Because remember, she shows up on her daughter's front doorstep. I have nothing. I have nowhere to live.
Right.
So at this point, Detective Paxton is thinking, old Sherry knows more than she's saying. So like a good detective would do, she puts a 24/7 tail on Sherry.
Nice.
And one night soon after, while police are camped outside her home, these two guys are out there thinking she's in for the night, you know, not so fast.
Really?
Sherry walks out her front door in the wee hours of the night, and in her hand is a dark garbage bag. She puts it in the trunk of her car, and then she gets in the car and starts driving.
Whoa.
And police are radioing in. She's on the move. We're in pursuit. We're following her. Yeah.
She's got a bag.
Yeah. That's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah.
They follow her 50 miles from her home to this shopping center. Sherry drives behind the shopping center and tosses the bag into a dumpster there. And police are watching this whole thing unfold. And as soon as Sherry drives away, police are dumpster diving and pull out the bag.
Yeah.
Because remember, now it's abandoned property. If right. you put your trash out and there's something incriminating in it, it's all fair game.
Absolutely.
Even if it's on your property sitting out front. If it's trash,
yep.
fair game.
Yep.
So police open this bag, and inside they find some clothes, women's clothes, and a 9mm handgun that's been disassembled.
Really?
The whole thing is taken in for forensics, and they find...
I have no idea. Blood?
Nothing.
Really?
It's clean.
Really?
But as they're continuing to tail her, they catch her spraying cleaning fluid in the trunk of her car while she's in Mesa, Arizona.
Mm.
So they bring Sherry back in for a chat.
Yeah.
And they ask her about the gun, and she tells them, look, I know this looks bad, but allow me to explain.
Go for it.
And I'm going to paraphrase this,
all
okay?
Right, all right.
She basically says, the FBI was up our butt, everything was falling apart, and I thought it was all over. I was so distraught after Dwight left in November, I was contemplating suicide. She tells the detectives that she couldn't go through with it. She was worried that she wasn't supposed to have the gun, so she decided to get rid of it. And her kids back her up on this, telling police that in 2008, when the feds first raided their parents, Sherry had, in fact, had a failed suicide attempt.
Okay.
Still, the detectives are like, I hear what you're saying, but it's not sitting right with us.
Yeah.
And they bring in Sherry and Dwight's kids to chat with them. They just want to catch everybody up on the investigation.
Sure.
And they tell the kids, we think your mom is hiding something. And maybe she won't open up to us, but maybe she will open up to you. What she's not saying to us, maybe she will say to you.
Right.
And they tell the kids, maybe she's helped him and he's hiding in another country. He's escaped to another country. Whatever it is, we need to know.
Right.
So they ask the kids to wear wires.
Oh, wow.
Specifically, they ask the son, Brett, to wear a wire.
This is getting intense.
And he voluntarily agrees.
Wow.
Detective Paxton tells him everything they have. And when he goes to speak with his mom on August 13th, 2010, he's wearing a wire and he has with him a hidden camera. Mm. Brett says to his mom, "Mom, I don't care what happened. I just want to know where he is." And Sherry says, quote, "I don't know where he is. I honestly do not know where he is." And when Brett presses his mother, she tells him to call the detectives and set up a meeting. Quote, "I'll be honest about all this stuff," end quote. That's what she tells her son.
Okay.
So the next day, Sherry goes into the Scottsdale Police Department. It's August 13th, 2010, 2 days before her 35th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
35 years.
Wow.
Detective Paxton interviews her again, thanks her for wanting to be honest and for helping them to find Dwight. And Sherry tells her, "Look, I want to help. I love my husband. I'm worried because Dwight had a friend who went off one time. He saw his family and friends. He said goodbye. And then he went into the desert and died by suicide." And she tells the police, "Maybe that's what Dwight did because we were so distraught."
Wow.
Now, all through this statement, she's crying and saying, "I just don't know what to tell you." But then they corner her on the location of Dwight's truck and the fact that it looked like somebody short was the last person to drive it. Someone who is like 5'3 or 5'4, like you, Sherry.
Just a coincidence.
And she confesses and tells them that, yeah, she parked it there. She tells police that Dwight had this plan. When he was gone, she was supposed to take the truck and park it in an apartment complex. He was going to take off for a while and go hide out, quote, 3 to 6 months or so, end quote. Sherry says Dwight told her to leave the truck there at the apartment complex and to leave the keys with it. It was supposed to be a part of the plan to throw the feds off of Dwight's trail.
Okay.
And she tells Detective Paxton once more, quote, "I don't know where he's at," end quote. Hmm. And you can see it in the footage of the interrogation. Detective Paxton, she scoots closer. It's a tactic, and I've sat in on interrogation classes before. It's pretty intimidating. Mm-hmm. There was a retired LAPD detective who came in and conducted the class that I was in, and he scared the absolute shit out of everybody. But Detective Paxton scoots in. She's all up in her face, and she just keeps pressing Sherry because she knows that Sherry is the only person who knows Dwight's location.
Right.
And as she's pressing her, Sherry makes a confession.
Really?
She tells Detective Paxton that there was an accident. She was going to shoot herself, but Dwight caught her, reached for the gun, and it went off. And before she can even say she's killed him, accident or no accident,
right,
Detective Paxton asks her, quote, "What did you do with his body?" end quote.
Yeah.
And Sherry says, quote, "I wrapped it up in the blankets and the comforter," end quote. Then she said she took his body out into the desert and left it there. Now, remember, Sherry's 5'4 and Dwight is 6 feet, whatever.
Right.
275 pounds.
Yeah.
When police question this, saying, "Sherry, he's a big man. How did you ever get him in the trunk or the back of your car or your truck?" And it's at this point she gives another story. First, she just shot him in the arm. Then as they struggled, he accidentally was shot in the head.
Man, there's a lot of accidents going on here.
Still, police are thinking, why is she lying? Did she have help? Is she covering for someone?
Right.
What's she hiding? Because remember, they don't have any forensic evidence of a murder.
Sure.
Yet. So they tell Sherry, "Let's just go get in the cruiser, honey. We're going to take a ride, and you're going to show us where you dumped the body."
Okay.
But as they drive out to where she claims the body is, the Bush Highway area, Sherry changes her story again. And then she says, "Well, this might not be the right location because it was dark." And when they're asking her questions, like, "Why isn't his body any of these places you're taking us?"
Right.
She says, "Well, maybe somebody's taken him." And after going to several locations, it's now getting dark in the desert.
Right.
And the police and Sherry are all together. They just give up. They take her back to the police station. And she is actually booked into the Scottsdale jail on Saturday, August 14th, 2010, with a $500,000 cash bond. She's a flight risk.
Sure.
She is charged with murder one and abandoning a human body.
Wow.
Meanwhile, 100 miles away in the Pima County Medical Examiner's office.
There we go.
They pick up the phone and they call Scottsdale PD and they say, hey, heard you're looking for a body. We've got an arm.
Yeah.
It came from Maricopa County. And another arm was found in Pinal County. And we know that a torso was found in La Paz County. And we've done a DNA profile. And even though we don't know who this John Doe is, we know that all of the body parts are the same person.
Wow.
They tell Scottsdale PD they don't have hands or feet. But oh, by the way, this is a big guy. They get DNA swabs from Dwight's parents in Kansas, and their suspicions are confirmed. The dismembered body parts in the desert are Dwight Tobin. Police start tracking down every bit of evidence they can get their hands on, including furniture that Sherry sold when she moved out of their condo. Police get their hands on the headboard of the bed from the master bedroom where Dwight was sleeping, and luminol testing shows blood spatter all over the back of the headboard.
Wow.
Where Dwight was shot while he was sleeping.
Wow.
He didn't catch her trying to kill herself and then struggle with the gun. It was just flat-out murder.
Sure.
She then bought a saw, disarticulated his body so she could move it, dropped the body bags all over the desert, and went home, cleaned out her vehicle, parked Dwight's truck at the apartment complex, trying to make it look like it was abandoned or stolen for them. Sits there for 8 months. She pretended to be Dwight, texting and emailing with her own family members, including her own children. Mm. Now, with body parts and hard evidence staring her in the face, Sherry Tobin admitted to murdering her husband, Dwight, on August 14th, 2010, the day after she's arrested.
Man.
Sherry is represented in court by the Maricopa County Public Defender, and even though she has confessed, the prosecutor files a notice. We will be seeking the death penalty.
Boom.
Sherry asked for an avowal to avoid execution, meaning she wants a plea deal in exchange for her confession.
Okay.
There is no trial. She pleaded guilty to murder, 4 counts of forgery, and abandoning a body. On May 19th, 2013, over 3 years after Dwight's murder, Sherry is sentenced to life plus 31 years.
Wow.
She was sent to the Perryville prison to become inmate 281121. Sherry worked as a library aide, a computer tech, and a porter in prison. She earned 50 cents an hour on her last job at the prison store. She did have one disciplinary infraction in 2016 for forgery.
She never learns.
Sherry Tobin would live only 8 years in prison. She passed away on January 1st, 2021. There are no reports on the cause of her death. Hmm. But here are my questions.
Okay.
Was Sherry the reason the feds were investigating Tobin and Company in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
What did she spend $1 million on to put them in debt in the first place?
Right.
And then another $750,000. Why, for 8 months, did Dwight's family not dig deeper into his disappearance?
Right.
Was it because of the federal investigation? Were people trying to distance themselves from that? You know, I mean, you would think if your dad's on the run or your brother's on the run from the feds, why do you want to come forward and say anything or ask questions?
But if they're getting texts from him, if they think they're getting texts from him, I mean, why would you
assume that anything bad happened?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But that is the sad story of Dwight and Sherry Tobin, and that's all I have to say about that.
Wow, what a case. You know what's really sad about this is the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a whole family's destroyed. They're thinking that their dad is alive the whole time. And then all of a sudden to find out that your mom murdered your dad.
Yeah, I did see an interview with the oldest girl, Jennifer, who Sherry went and lived with. Mm-hmm. And at that point, when this interview was taped, she had not been to see her mother. She had had no contact with her mom whatsoever. But at the end of the interview, she does say she has put in or written in to be allowed to go visit her mom.
I see.
Now, whether that happened or not before her mother passed away, I don't know. But it would be hard to reconcile what your mother did to your father. And now they're both gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sad.
It's very sad.
Wow. Wow. Well, before we do a bless your heart.
Yes.
I think you have something to add.
I have a listener story for you, a brush with true crime.
Nice.
This is from Judah Moyer.
Oh, my relation from my
family.
Mom's side.
Yeah. This one came from family.
Yep.
She did not give it a title, but I did, and it's called Did I Just Say That Out Loud?
Oh, man. Thanks, Judah.
Working as a deputy sheriff in Miami County, Ohio, one day in the early 1980s, I was assigned to be one of the drivers to take the jury to the scene of a homicide. Mm. We loaded them up in vans, the judge, the prosecutor, the defendant's attorney, the defendant, and the jury. And when we got to the house where the homicide occurred, we all got out of the vans and waited while the prosecutor decided how to arrange checking out the site. He took one group of jurors and headed off to the east side of the one-story brick house where the victim had been killed.
Okay.
The defendant stood with his attorney and said loudly enough that we all heard it, quote, "Why are they going over there?" End quote.
Oops.
He waved his arm to the west side of the house, quote, "I shot him over there," end quote.
Can you imagine that lawyer?
I remember there being no sound at all.
Oh, man.
Everyone was stunned. Even the birds seemed to stop singing.
Wow.
Verdict? The defendant was convicted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Well, that's up there with stupid criminals.
So thank you, Judah, for that. Did I just say that out loud?
Thanks, Judah.
I didn't kill him here. I killed him over there.
Oh, man.
Y'all are looking in the wrong place. Nothing like a stupid know-it-all.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much for that, Judah. And yep. If anybody else out there wants to give us a story about their brush with true crime, we're getting to them. We've got a little list of them, so it's very exciting.
Yep. All right, well, let's continue on with the stupid people with a little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right, number one, I'm starting off, which seems kind of appropriate. That's my bad.
That's my bad?
Yep.
Okay.
Woodbury, New Jersey. Police in a New Jersey city say a robber shot himself in the hand while attempting to pistol whip a victim.
Oh, my gosh.
Woodbury police responded to the scene of the shooting Tuesday night.
I have a tip for him. It's called a safety. Come on, man.
NewJersey.com reports police learned a group of four people allegedly planned to rob their 20-year-old acquaintance, but the attempted robbery went south after one of the robbers accidentally shot himself while hitting the victim in the head with the gun.
So they're robbing a friend?
I guess.
They're calling it an acquaintance.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So they're robbing somebody they know.
Yeah.
He's pistol whipping somebody he knows.
Yep, the robbers fled, but were quickly apprehended not far from the scene. Police say the gun used in the assault was found in the suspect's car. Yep, the robbery victim and suspect were taken to the hospital for treatments of injuries that were not life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
All four suspects now face charges. Imagine that.
That's a little bit of karma right there. Exactly. Try to pistol whip somebody and shoot yourself.
Man. All right, number two. Never mind me.
Never mind me.
Yep, Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. A Pennsylvania woman has been jailed on charges. She broke into a neighbor's home where she was caught doing something you'll never guess.
Oh, do I want to know? I don't think she's in there vacuuming.
Well, it's close.
Is it?
Well, the Pocono Record reports 44-year-old Kelly Bancroft of Shenandoah was charged Tuesday with burglary and criminal trespass.
Okay.
All right. A woman who lives down the street from Bancroft told police she went to use her bathroom about 4:30 p.m. and found Bancroft next to the tub, which was full of water, clothes, and shampoo. She was doing her laundry.
In the tub?
Yes.
Okay.
When the woman asked Bancroft how she got in the apartment, Bancroft locked the bathroom door and the resident summoned a neighbor to help. When that person arrived, Bancroft had run away, leaving wet clothes everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
Online court records don't list an attorney for Bancroft, who faces a preliminary hearing for her breaking and entering.
Oops. Yeah, guess she didn't have a washer and dryer, so she had to resort to the tub.
I guess she didn't have a tub either. All right, number three. Hey, y'all, watch this.
Watch this.
Yep. After a night of drinking, two Arkansas men decided to test the durability of a bulletproof vest by shooting each other.
No. Are you serious?
Rogers residents Charles Eugene Ferris, 50, and Christopher Hicks, 36, ended up in the hospital.
Go figure.
Where they told investigators they were shot after they were hired for a secret mission that involved following someone through Hobbs State Park, according to the Benton County Sheriff's Office.
A secret mission?
That was what they came up with.
Dude, nobody believed that one.
You think?
Yeah.
But when Ferris's wife showed up at the hospital, she had a different story to tell.
She's like, these two idiots.
Yep. The men, she told him, the men had been drinking on Ferris's back porch when he asked Hicks to shoot him. Although the vest stopped the bullet, it still left a painful mark on Ferris's chest. That upset Ferris. So when Hicks put on the vest, Ferris unloaded the clip into Christopher's back, according to an affidavit. Both men were arrested and charged with felony aggravated assault. Yeah. Before releasing them on a $5,000 bond, a judge issued a no-contact order between the men.
Don't you guys go near each other.
They each face up to 6 years in prison and a maximum of $10,000 fine.
Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so there's your idiots for the week.
Good Lord. Unbelievable. I mean, cops break ribs and stuff all the time with those.
And you know that they were close to each other, too.
And you know it's not like they have the latest Kevlar bulletproof vest.
And they were drunk.
And they were drunk with a firearm.
Yeah, they're lucky they hit the vest.
Lord have mercy.
Dumber.
Well, if you have a bless your heart or you know somebody who has no business owning a bulletproof vest.
I've done dumb things, but nothing like that. Jeez.
All you got to do is go to hitchtohomicide.com, where there's a pull-down menu. And while you're there, you can also suggest a case.
Yep.
And tell us about your brush with true crime.
Yeah.
That's all we have today. That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.